So today we'll concentrate on the first. But to remind you of the situation, you have some kind of scattering center here, and a plane wave is sort of incident on it. And although I've sort of drawn it in the same way as we did before, with this thing coming in along the negative z-axis, we could in general simply say that this incident plane wave has a wave function which is equal to e to the minus I vector k in dot r, where k in represents the incoming wave vector. Plus. So that the momentum would be h bar k in. Similarly, the outgoing wave is some kind of spherical wave modified by some function of theta, the scattering angle. And we knew that this was of the form, write this as psi in, psi out, is something like e to the I k r over r f of theta, where this k represents the wave vector of the outgoing radiation. So this is the modulus of k out, which is pointing at an angle theta scattering, this angle here, to k in. So f of theta tells you about what the kind of scattering is going to be. And of course, what we have to do is calculate f of theta. I will construct a formula which will work even if the thing is not axis symmetric. So this thing could be a function of phi in principle. And the formula that I'll end up deriving will work even if v is not axis symmetric, not spherically symmetric. But I'm not going to concentrate at all on that particular case, just deal with spherically symmetric ones. So the next step is to find f of theta. Now, it would be very helpful to know how many people have come across Green's functions. Everyone? No? That looks to me like two-thirds. Is that right? Are you all happy with Green's functions, those that know about it? Right. All right, so a lightning review of some properties of Green's functions. A Green's function for something like Laplace's equation or the Schrodinger equation, I'm going to take to be a solution of this equation. Where this is going to be a three-dimensional delta function. So really, it's just a solution of del squared plus k squared g of r and r prime as equal to 0, as long as r is not equal to r prime. And then you've got to sort of figure out what this delta function contribution is going to be. The first thing that will make your life easy is to realize that you can use translation invariance to put r prime at the origin. And then it's sort of, you're dealing with a situation which is really spherically symmetric about the origin. Because although this thing is a sort of delta, three-dimensional delta function of r minus r prime, once you put that equal to this thing equal to zero, the origin is a sort of preferred point, and everything just depends on how far you are from the origin, just like would happen if you did electrostatic type problems, which is probably where you first came across them. Yes?
Is the del acting on R?
My del is acting on R, not R prime. Otherwise, of course, I could not put R prime equal to zero. So, so we need to write out del squared r in spherical polar coordinates. So this thing is 1 over r squared d by dr of r squared d acting on g. And then there's some angular dependence, which isn't going to matter. But if we wanted to write it down, we can. Spherical symmetry means we don't really care about this bit. I wrote it down for this bit down for a reason. The explicit reason is that we are going to need it tomorrow when we talk about something else. So if you don't remember where this comes from, now is the time to, this afternoon is the time to do something about it. Sorry? Now, so let's try to find a G. It's only a function of r, and the simple thing to do is to guess what it's going to be. So I'm going to guess that it's going to be, well, e to the ikr times some function of r. Before we go any further, you should note that it really doesn't matter whether it's plus ikr or minus ikr. That's because it's k squared which shows up here. So you don't care whether this is a plus or a minus, because the two would be the same. And you don't care about the sine of r either, because if you look at these terms are all even in r. So one could just as well write e to the plus or minus ikr, and you'll get the same thing. But it could be either of them. This k is that k. So having got to that stage, I will just concentrate on the plus sign. And now you can find a nice differential equation for f of r. So g was e to the ikr f of r. So dg dr is equal to e to the ikr, sort of common factor which comes out, f prime plus ikf. Then we multiply by r squared. So r squared dg dr is e to the ikr r squared f prime plus r squared I k f. You differentiate again. Differentiating this term gives me a factor of ik everywhere. Why have we got a, that should be a prime, one prime, not two. Ik r squared f prime minus r squared k squared f. That's multiplying this thing by ik from differentiating that. Then you differentiate these terms, so there's a plus r squared f double prime plus 2r f prime. Then you differentiate this, so you get plus 2i r squared k f prime. Gives me a 3 there. And then you differentiate this, and you get plus 2i r k f. So that this thing now becomes, hope we've got this right, e to the ikr into r squared f double prime plus 2r f prime. We want to divide by r squared. Then there's going to be a plus 3ik f prime. Then there'll be a minus k squared f. That's it, 1, 2, plus 2ik f over r. And then there's this term here, nothing from there, plus k squared. So these two terms cancel out, and you're left with this thing, which doesn't look quite right to me. Where have I lost something? Right. Now, this is all, this is what this object is.
Oh.
Now, I've got a 3 here, and I believe I should have a 2. What did I do wrong? It there's one of them from there, and I differentiated that, giving me 2 of them, not 3 of them, so it's really 2. That's better. So now it's kind of obvious what f is. We want this thing to be what, delta 3 of r. So it's got to be 0 when r is not equal to 0. So the obvious solution is f equals 1 over r. So that will give you f prime is minus 1 over r squared. F double prime is 2 over r cubed. And you stick that into there, and you'll get nothing. Except that, of course, that r equals 0, then differentiating simply doesn't work, and you don't know quite what you get. So we now know, almost, what the Green's function is. I put r prime equal to 0, remember. It's going to be e to the ik r over r. We've already learnt that we could have put k equal to minus k, it doesn't make any difference. So it'll be, in general, some linear combination of these two things. If there was no delta function there, and I wrote down that thing as a wave function, then this would correspond to outgoing spherical waves. Of the kind that you would expect if you were doing a scattering process. That's because the momentum operator in the radial direction is just minus IH bar d by dr. So that, acting on this, will give me a plus h bar k. Similarly, the other term with a minus sign corresponds to ingoing spherical waves. And is absolutely not what you expect for a scattering process. After all, you don't do a scattering process, something scatters off some center, that will give you stuff going out, but it doesn't give you stuff going in. So these probably don't correspond to things we're interested in, and these do. That, of course, does not fix what A and B are. To find out what A and B are, what you have to do is to look carefully at what happens near R equals zero. However, it's also helpful to remind yourself of something which you have probably seen elsewhere. If R is small, that's really the only place that you're interested in this, meaning kr very much less than 1, then if you expanded this out in powers of r, you would get a plus b into 1 over r, plus a constant term, ik into a minus b, plus stuff, which all vanishes as r goes to 0. And we already know that the problem comes at r equals 0, so all the stuff up here can't possibly do anything interesting to you. Also, you probably know that del squared of 1 over r is equal to minus 4 pi delta of r, in a three-dimensional sense. Do you all know that? Not exactly a convincing, resounding yes.
Well, there's no.
The quick way to prove that is just to say, well, let's apply the divergence theorem to this equation and see if we believe it. Yes.
So when you, I know that when you apply the divergence theorem to this equation, you get that result. But is it, it seems like that result is only, you're sort of sticking in the delta function to compensate for the fact that the divergence theorem is not true for non-simply connected. Like you're applying the divergence theorem in a case where it's not true, and then because you get the wrong answer, you stick in a correction.
that's quasi fair.
I mean, is there like a real reason that it, you know, makes sense to do that?
Yes. What you would have to do to convince yourself that this all worked was take the delta function as limit of some sequence of functions. I have no intention of doing that. The point is that a delta function is not a function. It's a distribution. Yeah. So to do this properly, I'm going to have to do something with distributions. On the other hand, since we're all physicists in this audience, or at least actually, it's not clear that I am, but never mind. You might call me a mathematician, you see. Well, my department certainly does. you would have said that this represented the electrostatic potential of a point charge. And so this is the charge density. So why should we be surprised by any of this? You can't seriously want me to do something to do with limits of functions.
No, I just wanted to know whether there's like a, like, whether this is anything more than just people trying to apply the divergence theorem because it doesn't work, and then, like, is the delta function anything more than just this?
As far as Dirac was concerned, the answer is no. However, generations of mathematicians onwards from Schwartz, then the answer is yes. And the way in which you do it is you want to regard the delta function as a limit of the collection of functions. Now, if you do this in one dimension, what you would do would be something like 1 over lambda times lambda x. Now, so for three dimensions, the best way to do it is limits of Gaussian.
Yeah.
It's an interesting challenge as to whether I can make that work, because there's a dicey issue of commuting limits.
The idea is that if you, like, you could just plug the, you could plug the limiting function into that equation, you would get, like...
Right, and then everything will be differentiable, and then you take the limit.
Okay.
At the end. I really don't want to do that. The lowbrow way of doing it is the following way. You just simply say, I'm going to integrate this over all space, including or excluding, as you wish, the origin. So first of all, that does not include the origin. So here is V. I already knew that del squared of V, del squared of 1 over R was equal to 0 everywhere in V. The delta function is equal to 0 everywhere in V. And so the integral of del squared of 1 over R over any V that does not contain the origin is equal to 0. Doesn't matter what shape this thing is. That would be a fine shape. That's kind of obvious. So let's look at what happens if you do include the origin. So here is a V which does include the origin. Obviously, trying to use a divergence theorem on this is tricky. But the simplest thing to do is to argue that whatever you do, you can deform V without changing the value of the integral of del squared of 1 over R this is going to be the same as the integral of del squared of 1 over R over a small sphere of radius rho around the origin. If you don't believe that, you can say the difference between this surface and that surface, using the divergence theorem, is zero, because the integral over this intervening region is zero. I should just say of radius. So that this thing becomes the integral. Now use the divergence theorem. This will be the gradient of 1 over r dot ds over the surface of this little sphere. Let's call this thing S. Because it doesn't depend on which surface you pick. I mean, we could have picked any old surface here and deformed it into this one. What do you get? DS is going to be, if you constructed little polar coordinates around this thing, it would be r squared, rho squared, sine theta, d phi, pointing in the radially outward direction. So there will be a r hat here, meaning unit vector in the r direction. What is the gradient of 1 over r? The answer is it's minus 1 over r squared. So on the sphere, you will get that expression. And if you remember, this is a small sphere. The only place that we've got a problem is going to be at the origin. This will differentiate to give me a 1 over r squared. This won't give me anything. All the higher order terms will give me things which vanish. So this is a reasonable approximation to this. And if I carry out that integral, the rho squareds cancel. The unit vector in the r direction dots with itself and gives me 1. I integrate over all theta and phi, and that gives me a 4 pi with a minus sign.
Where's your Oh, never mind. It's a surface. Sorry.
Now, I've got lost. So I was conjecturing that del squared of 1 over r was minus 4 pi delta of rho, delta of r. But that, you see, is exactly the properties that you would expect from the delta function. That is to say, if you integrated this over any volume which contains the, does not contain the origin, so let's look at the right hand side. Then you'll get zero, because delta of r is always equal to zero. If it does contain the origin, then that thing's just going to be equal to minus 4 pi. So that is a lowbrow demonstration of it's what, that it's what we expect. The presence of an e to the ikr in this, or e to the minus ikr, is not going to make any difference, because you can see there is nothing singular about this function. If you wanted to be more convincing about this, what you could do would be to take, multiply this by arbitrary functions and integrate over the same kind of region and see that it's still true. That might be more convincing. But this will do because we've come across Green's functions before, and all we're after is the normalization. So, what have we discovered? Del squared plus k squared acting on g of r equals delta of r is satisfied by g equals a e to the I k r over r plus b e to the minus I k r over r, as long as a plus b is equal to minus 1 over 4 pi. There is a fundamental ambiguity about the solution of the Green's function equation. A and B can be absolutely anything, provided it obeys this constraint. You don't know which one it is. You have to fix which Green's function you want based on the problem that you are interested in trying to solve. So what problem are we trying to solve? Let's go back to the Schrödinger equation. The physical setup is something like that. And we're trying to solve minus h bar squared over 2m, del squared psi plus v psi equals, let's see, I was going to say e psi, but I think that I want to say, well, let's leave it like that. E is the energy of the waves coming in and of the waves going out. So it's a sort of steady state in where these waves propagate in and then propagate out. So we don't have to do anything time dependent to solve this problem. This is all we're interested in. So for convenience, I'm going to put E psi equal to h bar squared k squared over 2m times psi. That's completely natural because, after all, the energy is equal to momentum over 2m, momentum squared over 2m. So that tells us that if we rearrange this equation, what we're trying to do is to solve the equation del squared plus k squared equals, acting on psi, is equal to over h bar squared v psi. Oh, yes. Now, there's one further thing that I should do before we go any further. So, fortunately, what we have done is we've found the Green's function for this operator. So that's good. This is the Green's function for g. We put r prime equal to 0. So that's that Green's function. What we really need is g of r and r prime. Which are vectors. Well, it's very fortunate, you see, that the only thing you've got here is an r multiplied by the modulus of k. So, really, that simply says that everywhere you see r, you can replace it by the modulus of r minus r prime. And that's it. So you will get 1 over the modulus of r minus r prime into a e to the I k modulus of r minus r prime plus b e to the minus I k modulus of r minus r prime. Provided a plus b is equal to minus 1 over 4 pi. These are vectors. I will underline them to emphasize that fact. K, remember, is the modulus of the wave vector. that you corresponds to things which are outgoing or ingoing. So, what we want to do is to use these facts here to make this equation nice. So let's rewrite it, putting in all the relevant factors of R so that we can see what is going on. So what this really is del squared of anything plus k squared psi of anything is equal to 2m over h bar squared v of r psi of r. I missed a minus sign somewhere. No, I've not missed a minus sign. So this R could be any label, and I actually want to change this to an R prime. No, actually, why do? I guess I don't need to change it to an R prime. It's an R prime in my notes, but I have a feeling that that is going to cause a complication. Let's just leave it like that. So that's the Schrödinger equation in its original form. What I want to do now is to multiply by g of R R prime and integrate over all R. So let's just do that. You get del squared with respect to r plus k squared psi of r g of r r prime integrated over all r is equal to 2m over h bar squared integral v of r psi of r g of r r prime d3r. That obviously still works. Remember, this integral is taken over all space. What I want to do is look at this thing. I want to integrate by parts, or alternatively, if you prefer it, use Green's theorem. If I integrate by parts, we've got here a term that looks like, forget the r prime for the moment, r prime is fixed. We've got a g of r del squared r psi of r. This integral is taken over all space, so if I integrate by parts once, I will get minus the integral of grad g of r r prime dotted with grad psi, plus boundary terms at infinity. Which I'm going to ignore. And then I can do it again. And I will get plus del squared g of r r prime with respect to r, acting on psi of r. Again, plus boundary terms, which I can forget. So integrating this term here by parts twice is going to give me d the integral of del squared r plus k squared psi of r, sorry, g of r, get it right, multiplied by psi of r, and this is equal to that thing. Can I erase my intermediate step here? Del squared acting on G, we have convinced ourselves, is just the delta function with a factor of four, with no factors of 4 pi, because it's just del squared acting on G is delta. So using the fact that you know this, you can substitute that into there and get the integral of delta of r, psi of r, try again, delta of r r prime, psi of r d3r is equal to this expression. But this is just psi of r prime. So what we have derived is the fact that any solution of the Schrödinger equation must obey this integral equation. Anyone. So what we want to do is to use this relationship to try and figure out some properties of these wave functions. I sort of suspect that contemplating this equation is what gave Feynman his idea about path integrals for interacting systems. But unfortunately, we can't ask him, so we'll just have to make do with conjecture. Suppose that V was zero. Then what would happen is, of course, this would be equal to zero, and this equation would be uninteresting. But what you can do is you can sort of use an iterative procedure to try to figure out some properties of the solutions. So the starting point is this. If V was small, and you put in the initial wave function, which we know to be of the form e to the ik in dot r at infinity here, we could use this to calculate the response psi of r. Because what it's basically saying is that you do something to this incoming wave function, and you get this. And if all you're interested in what happens to order 1 in V of r, that's it. So you can sort of think of this in a sort of diagrammatic sense. Here is your scattering center. There is a wave function corresponding to an incoming particle. How do you build the wave function for the outgoing particle? You act with this. So there's a sort of region of interaction around the scattering center, described by doing this to the wave function, and it produces a new wave function for going out. So if you like, you can think of this as being what happens when you want to scatter some particle off some potential. So starting with e to the I k in dot r, plugging it into here will give rise to some solution to order v, but only to order v, that corresponds to scattering through this potential. But only to order v. That represents the result of scattering by the potential v. We actually have to convince ourselves that that is true. So let's look at this relationship here. We want to end up with a wave function, psi of r prime, that represents an outgoing spherical wave. We do that by plugging in some Green's function here. That now tells us which Green's function to plug in. It must be the one that involves outgoing waves. If you have the one that involves ingoing waves, you'll get an ingoing answer, which is not what you want. So for physical reasons, you will choose A equal to minus 4 pi and B equal to 1. Zero, sorry, yes. In relativistic theory, you have to do something a little bit different. Yes?
The wave function phi r prime is defined, we expect at infinity the potential to be zero. And if we do that, the wave function should be the incoming wave. So that by that relation, it's like the wave function is zero at infinity.
Oh, but you end up with zero if you put in the incoming wave because of the properties of the Green function. Is that what you mean?
So what I'm saying is that that potential can only have effect on the final range. So at infinity, when the incoming wave comes from infinity, we expect the phi r prime to be equal to phi r prime. So maybe a phi r prime plus that integral, so that it satisfies the fact that when we are at infinity, the potential is zero, means that the wave function is incoming wave.
Well, the answer is to try it and see if it's true. Isn't it? You'll get something. If that's what, if you expect that you put in the incoming wave at infinity, you get the outgoing wave, it's true, but you don't get the same thing that you started with, because it, after all, depends on v in some crucial way. All you know about the incoming wave is it's this way over here, some complicated mess inside here. It's this out near r equals infinity. Our aim is to try to calculate something that looks like this. So I think the thing to do is to try it and see what happens. Sometimes these things don't obey your expectations. So what is this thing? Psi of r prime is equal to 2m over h bar squared integral of v of r psi of r incoming and then we have the Green's function g of r r prime that was e to the I k modulus of r minus r prime divided by r minus r prime normalized by a factor of 4 pi. I get my 4 pi's right as opposed to wrong. So I think it's minus. So that's my normalization factor. Now, you know, we have to integrate over all r here. Now, we know that this expression here, well, this expression here, we're looking for what happens as r prime goes to infinity. If r prime goes to infinity, whatever the value of r, then we can expand this term out. This is the same thing as the square root of r squared minus 2r dot r prime plus r prime squared to the 1/2. So you can take out the factor of r prime and rewrite this as 1 minus 2r dot r prime over r prime squared plus r prime squared over r squared, r squared over r prime squared to the 1/2. And if you want to expand this out, it is approximately, for large r prime, remember, it's large r prime because we're only interested in the form of the wave function out here. We don't care about the form of the wave function close into the scattering because we can't see what happens close to the scattering center. It's like saying, well, you can't have a detector the size of an atom. So this is approximately 1 r prime into 1 minus r dot r prime over r prime squared, plus higher order stuff, which we don't care about. So this is approximately r prime minus r dot r prime over r prime. We need to use that both here and here. So that this expression looks something like 2m over h bar squared integral v of r e to the I k in dot r 1 over r minus r prime. That's, let's write that 1 over r minus r prime. This is 1 over, probably best done from here, 1 over r prime into 1 plus r dot r prime squared plus higher order stuff that I'm uninterested in. So this thing gives me a 1 over r prime. And then you'll notice that all this stuff here dies off faster than 1 over r prime. So it's 1 over r prime from that, and another one from here, so it's 1 over r prime squared. But I'm looking for a psi out, which only has one factor of 1 over r prime. So I don't really care about any of these higher order things. I can approximate this by just the 1 over r prime term. Then I come to the exponential. That's e to the ik. R prime is large, so I get that. But you will discover that I have to keep this term as well, because this is the same order. E is order 1, e to the minus ik, r dot r prime, over r prime. Then the rest of those terms don't count. So these three terms here are an approximation to this. And then there's a factor of minus 1 over 4 pi, and integral d3r. You get psi out a function of r prime, hopefully e to the ik r prime over r prime f of theta, this being psi out is equal to, you hope, a numerical factor, minus m over 2 pi h bar squared. Integral of v of r, e to the ik in r, scalar product. The next two terms are a 1 over r prime and an e to the ik r prime, which can come out of the integral. They do not depend on r at all, so they can come out. Then there is this factor here, which is e to the ik r dot r prime over r prime. You have to be a bit careful about that. Here, what you have got is essentially mod r times mod r prime times the cosine of the angle between them. Cosine. Let's write it explicitly like that. It's e to the minus ik. Fortunately, these factors of r prime, you see, cancel. And you get an r, and you get a cos theta. So this is the cosine of the angle between k and your r coordinate system. So this is just the scattering angle. So I could rewrite this in a slightly different way. K r cos theta is equal to k out dot r, because k out is just an angle theta to k in, and r was oriented so that k in was parallel to r. So that thing is this thing. So this is minus m over 2 pi h bar squared, integral v of r, e to the I, k in minus k out, dot r, and then there's a factor of e to the ik r prime over r. So these cancel, and what you're left with is the following suggestive looking expression. F of theta is equal to m over 2 pi h bar squared, a minus sign. Integral v of r e to the I k in minus k out dot r d3r. D3r seems to have got left out here. So this is an expression for f of theta. We made a number of approximations on the way. This is usually known as the Born approximation. And there is a problem which was alluded to earlier, and that is there was a question of whether or not I could ignore psi close to the origin. So it does require the wave function near the origin to be small. We did a calculation only to first order in V. So V had better be small. And of course, it requires V to go to 0 at infinity so that these asymptotic forms of the wave function really do work. So, of course, there are many caveats in that. However, if you stare at this expression, you will see that, in actual fact, there's something very appealing about it. K in minus K out, you can think of as being, essentially, the change in momentum between the in and the outgoing particles. Apart from a factor of h bar. Divided by h bar. In fact, it is often written as Q, in which case, if you think about it, this thing becomes even more appealing. If you thought about it that way, you would say that f of theta was equal to minus 2 pi over h bar squared, v of r, e to the I q dot r, d3r, where theta corresponded to the scattering angle. If you stared at that expression, you would probably all say, oh, this is just the Fourier transform of the potential. In actual fact, this will work even if V is not spherically symmetric, but I didn't really go into that. And in all the examples we are likely to come across, it is spherically symmetric, so that you don't have to worry too much about that. If you have to remember a formula to do with the Born approximation, this is the one to remember. Now, how do we evaluate this? You can turn it into a nice general formula for the case that V of R is spherically symmetric. Then f of theta is equal to minus m over 2 pi h bar squared integral d3r, which we'll come back to in a minute. No, let's do it now. This is r squared dr sine theta d theta d phi. Now, a moment's thought will reveal there are too many thetas in this expression. I wanted to use polar coordinates to integrate over r, so this theta is not the same as that theta. I will distinguish it by putting a bar on it, so that r theta bar phi are the polar coordinates. Yeah, I'll come back and I'll put a theta s there in a minute. And then he says, I called that one theta s before, quite right. So I'll put a theta s there to make sure it's theta scattering. And so they'll now look completely different. It requires two mistakes to get them confused, not one. V of r. E to the I q dot r under these circumstances now collapses down to q r cos theta bar. Q is the modulus of the momentum transfer divided by h bar. To do this integral is not hard. The integral over phi just gives me a 2 pi. So that kills off that 2 pi. Theta bar runs from 0 to pi. No. It's the angle between the vector q and your coordinate system. So it should not. It's the polar coordinates of theta. All of the theta scattering is in q. The integral over theta bar you can do. Because the differential of cos theta is minus sine theta, so this you'll get an e to the I q r cos theta over minus I q r within the limits 0 to pi. Let's stick the limits in. These minus signs disappear. There's an I on the bottom. There's a Q on the bottom. Where did this 2 pi come from? No 2 pi. There's an M over H bar squared. R squared dr V of R. And then from this, you will get an e to the iqr with a minus sign, minus e to the plus iqr, which is minus 2i sine qr. So you end up with minus 2m over qh bar squared. Integral from 0 to infinity of r squared dr v of r sine qr. That's as far as you can go because the precise nature of this thing depends on what you think V of R is going to be. R, yes, R. Not R squared. We ought to say something about Q. Q, the vector, was K in minus K out. So in terms of something observable, it's best to simply think about this in some particular frame. So we could say that K in was something like modulus of K, 0, 0, 1, and a minus sign because it's going in initially. This would be the wave vector along the negative z direction inwards. K out is at some angle to this thing. So, actually, I'm going to change that to a plus 1 because it really is along the positive z direction. Cos theta scattering, sine theta scattering, so that this angle, this thing is an angle theta s to that. So what's Q? Q will be the object as a vector, K, 0, minus sine theta scattering, 1 minus cos theta scattering. Whereas what shows up in this integral is the modulus of Q, so it's worth our while trying to compute the modulus of Q. The modulus of Q squared is K squared into that squared plus that squared plus that squared. So multiplying this out, you get K squared into sine squared theta s plus 1 minus 2 cos theta s plus cos squared theta s. So if you think about that, that's really sine squared plus cos squared is 1, combines with this 2, gives me an overall factor of 2 into 1 minus cos theta s. 1 minus cos theta s is 2 sine squared half theta s. So you now know that Q is 2k sine half theta s. So that's how you typically do this kind of thing for a spherically symmetric potential. It's worth remembering the formula in terms of the Fourier transform of V. That is the only one that I can remember. I cannot remember this formula, although lots of people do like to remember it. I find that one obscure. The Fourier transform is the way to do it. So to find f of theta and the scattering cross-section, all you have to do is choose your potential. Yes?
How different is this from the idea of diffraction of like a slit or some object in classical wave optics?
Oh, classical wave optics.
Yeah, where you have a diffraction pattern that's the Fourier transform of the aperture.
Well, you can actually do calculations like that precisely this way. And in fact, I guess that's exactly what Helmholtz and Fennell actually did. Because they calculated the Green's function and then did things with it. So in that sense, it's very, very similar.
So this is basically just doing that, but using a quantum mechanical wave function instead of a classical.
Yeah.
It is exactly this calculation of the form of a diffraction, which, and we get the Fourier transform exactly.
Right, exactly. Yes. It is the same calculation. I mean, this was done before quantum mechanics. So in that sense, the only difference is that you realize that things are quantum mechanical. Of course, I guess that's what De Broglie really did for the first time. What was I trying to do? Oh, I know, yes. So as an example, something you can do, you could have taken V equals K over R squared, the same thing that we had before. Sorry? It's the K that we can speak of. The thing that we did a classical calculation of. So you just need to stick that into this formula here. F of theta is going to be equal to minus 2m over h bar squared q integral 0 to infinity of r v of r, so that's big K times 1 over r squared sine qr dr. That's a blob. If you want to do this integral, the best thing to do is to realize that you can put qr equal to x, something dimensionless, this becomes sine x. This is r dr over r squared. So it's the same thing as dx over x. So this integral does not depend on q, yes? I do. Where? Kill these r's off. I've got dr over r. That's the same as dqr over dqr, which is dx over x. Unless I have made a mistake in another place. I guess you need to convince yourself what the value of this integral is. I think it's 2 pi. Oh, sorry, pi over 2. There are many ways of doing that integral. I'm not going to concentrate on that. And so this thing is going to be equal to... So that's f of theta for this potential.
So it doesn't actually depend on...
Well, it does depend on q. You see, because there's a q sitting down here.
Right. Oh, but there's a theta embedded in that.
But there's no... This integral, you see, is a pure number. We don't have to worry too much about it. You could look it up, get Mathematica to do it, but much better to do it yourself by some method. But I don't know how to do that without using contour integrals. So that's how you do scattering in the Born approximation. And I guess this afternoon we should do some examples of that. Right, let's stop there.